Boot check. Basketball, basketball college. Basketball, basketball college.
Oh, is that time already?
Whoa.
Welcome into another episode of the Heat Check Hangout, your number one source for all things basketball, basketball, college. I'm your host, Brian Ralph. Joined as always, my co-host, Connor Hope. Riley Davis is a quote-unquote on assignment, a.k.a. prepping for a baby. So he has other things to do. Connor certainly knows that, and I do as well. But we're back after a bit of a break here. Life has been kind of crazy for all of us these last couple of weeks since the season ended. And we have some cool things going on behind the scenes at Heat Check that should be coming to fruition here in the next couple of weeks, couple of months. And I know I'm certainly very excited about it. I will speak for Connor, and I think we're all very excited about what's coming down the pipe. So make sure you're staying tuned to Heat Check for all of that. But today we're podcasting. Today we are talking about the offseason so far, offseason that is to come. Transfer portal has been hot and heavy, coaching changes. Connor, just so far, the first couple weeks of the offseason, what's been your biggest takeaway or biggest thing that's on your mind?
I think, rightfully or unjustly, I think we are putting a lot of emphasis on the transfer portal in terms of getting good transfers can do a lot of things for a program. Right. And you saw the Final Four last year, very transfer heavy in that Final Four. I think we might be reaching the logical fault of putting that much emphasis on the transfer portal in, you know, we joke about good get season, where everything and anything is a good get. I think a lot of these teams that quote unquote have won the transfer portal are going to be good teams. Mm. But, you know, if you're looking at any of these teams that are winning the transfer portal, that would include Gonzaga, that would include West Virginia, and you put them against a team that really didn't have to do much in the transfer portal in Duke. Like, is it wrong of me to think that Duke is leaps and bounds better than both of those teams, Arkansas, or any of these teams that quote unquote won? Like, West Virginia's transfer gets are good. I think people are overestimating what this West Virginia team to me is the Arkansas team of last year, which is the ceiling is incredible. Mm-hmm. It could also be a mess, and I'm not sure which one is more likely.
Yeah, West Virginia in particular, like, you're going to trust Kirk Creasa? Now, if he has the same kind of regular season success and flashes at West Virginia that he did at Arizona, like, that's huge for West Virginia. West Virginia will take that. But I am with you in the sense that none of these guys, and I think really classes in the portal, take anybody into like Final Four contender status if they weren't there already, right? Like it's going to make, I think there are cases where it makes teams better. I think more often than not this season, the major additions that have been added have more so been to maintain a program's status or standing from one year to the next.
Yeah.
Like you brought up Gonzaga. Gonzaga was expecting something of a drop off first year post Drew Timmy, right? But then you bring in Nembhard, you bring in Graham Ike from Wyoming, and suddenly that drop off probably won't happen. They may not be as good, the ceiling may not be as high, but like they're still going to be a top 15 team in the country, if not top 10 team in the country. Creighton lost Nembhard, put Steven Ashworth in there, and you roll with that if you're Creighton, right? TCU lost Mike Miles, lost Eddie Lampkin, but you bring in Jameer Nelson Jr. and Avery Anderson, a couple other guys in that TCU class. Like, TCU is going to be around in a tournament team, a top 25 team again next season. UNC kind of added some pieces. Florida's doing the same thing again. Wake Forest keeps adding quality guards to kind of lead that system. I think that's where you're going to look at and see the quote unquote success from the portal. I don't think we're going to see cases like we saw or expected last year, 2 years ago, where like Texas got a whole bunch of starting caliber guys and it was like, oh, well, they're a title contender now. Or Arkansas gets a whole bunch of guys and they're like, oh, they're a title contender now. I think that's done. I think we're far enough in the life of the transfer portal that there aren't as many true, like, game-changing difference makers that enter it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's more guys who are looking for a better opportunity or didn't prove themselves at their previous stop. So if you're able to patch holes as opposed to make your team, I think that's what you're looking at the portal to do.
Yeah, and for teams like Gonzaga, right, it's we're assuming Steel Venters pulls out of the draft, right, because he's already announced his intent to transfer to Gonzaga, pulls out. There's probably a 50-50 shot, maybe a little bit better, that either Malachi Smith or Anton Watson or both pull out of the draft and return to Gonzaga. Like, that's a really good team. I still wouldn't necessarily say it's a top 10 team because you don't have that guy. Like, Nembhard isn't wired to be that guy. He's wired to be an incredible pick and roll ball handler. That's what he's wired to do. So you need to kind of create that guy or find that guy. Maybe it's Steel Venters. Maybe Dusty Stromer comes in immediately ready to make an impact. But I think more likely than not, you're looking at a team that's just a well-oiled machine, good enough to make a second weekend, not necessarily good enough to win it all. I think my issue, and I'm going to say this again, this can be my bold prediction, I really don't like this West Virginia team. Is it bad? Like, you bring in all these guys, right? And Frez, you know, yes, transfers are important. Want to know what else is important? Shooting. Want to know who the most efficient shooter on this projected West Virginia team is?
Who?
Guess. Just guess.
Kirk Risa
is the most efficient shooter on this team. Trey Mitchell's the second most efficient shooter on the team. That's West Virginia.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Jose Perez. You're going to start a guard that is not really a guard.
Right.
That whole deal from last season.
Raekwon Battle did great last year. He shot like 35%.
Yeah.
But in his career, even and especially at the high major level, wasn't that efficient. So, like, you're looking at this team going, yeah, they're a bunch of guys, they're a bunch of good players, but we saw with UConn, like, you need to be able to make the 3-point shot. That's what won last year. Like, if you can't do that at any reasonable clip, you're not gonna do well, especially not in March. So,
yeah,
especially not in that conference. I just think we have a lot of overreactions, right? Gonzaga's not immediately a contender. They could be, but they're not immediately a contender. West Virginia's not immediate. The only team right now that I'm comfortable, maybe the only two teams right now that I'm comfortable at this point, not knowing who in the draft process is actually coming back, that I'm comfortable saying they're contenders, Duke and Creighton. UConn's probably going to be there once it all shakes out. Marquette's there. I'll throw Marquette in with those other two. But outside of that, like, you're looking at a bunch of teams that either need people to return. You're looking at a bunch of teams that have a lot of questions to answer. And I just think people are overreacting to good get season. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm overreacting a bit to the overreaction, but like when all is said and done.
Yeah. I don't think necessarily, because as you talk about that, the first thing that pops in my head is that I think next year is going to be like something of an indictment of a narrative about the transfer portal. Right. As we sit right now, I think Duke is a pretty clear number one. And yeah, I kind of hesitate in saying that, like, because this time last year, I was so adamant that UNC was head and shoulders above everybody else. And I was way wrong. But this Duke team is different because they were not bad last year. Return guys and bring in ultra talented freshmen. So if Duke like delivers on the hype, and is that number one team for a good portion of the season, top seed in the NCAA tournament, I think the narrative around this shifts where the reactionary nature of sports and media and fans to be, oh, freshmen are still valuable. Like, you want to, you want to get the ultra talented NBA guys in your program. Like, that still matters. That's still the goal. You focus a lot on the transfer portal because it's new and shiny, and you do have guys like Hunter Dickinson that enter it. Still haven't decided where he's going at the time of this recording. You can still get impact players there. But to compile the kind of recruiting classes that Duke did, and that Kentucky did as well. Now Kentucky expectations aren't as high, but if that Duke team does well, it's going to be the narrative is going to shift to a focus of keeping your players in high school recruiting again, because we are incapable of having a conversation where both things can be true, right? You can fill holes in a portal and also build a strong team recruiting from high school kids. But I feel like the narrative has been, it's either all one or all the other.
Yeah. I mean, and it's important to keep guys, right? Like,
right.
UConn last year, they had four players in their, you can call a 9-man rotation. 9 guys played over 10 minutes a game. They had 4 guys who they got through the transfer portal. 3 of them played, well, 2 of them played under 15 minutes. 1 of them played under 20. And then you had Tristan Newton, right? Who was great. He was also what, the third or fourth option on that team. Mm-hmm. So I think the transfer portal, people overestimate, in my opinion, its impact. Mm-hmm. You can find those guys. San Diego State was led by transfers, right? You can certainly find those guys, but I think it's just as important to return players. And so when you're trying mm-hmm. to, like, that's the great thing with Duke is that they bring in a bunch of talent, but they're also returning a lot of guys. And I think, you know, we talk too much about this. Oh, you can instantly flip a program on its head through the transfer portal. It's like, yeah, but you also need to like establish something. You can't just add mm-hmm. a bunch of guys and expect it to go well. I mean, sure, if you're Arkansas, maybe, but Arkansas walks a fine line of what we saw the two previous years and what we saw last year in terms of what can happen when you rely on entirely new teams every single year.
So if you hate West Virginia, who do you like from a transfer class?
Oh, geez. I mean, first of all, you'd have to see where like people start to land.
I'll just say I'll like wherever Hunter Dickinson ends up. I think that'll be a win.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, he's the one game changer in this class. There are a lot of good players, or decent amount of good players, but he's the one, to me, he's the only one that can elevate a team to a different stratosphere they weren't in normally, or right. would have been without him. I mentioned this at the top, but I'm a big fan of what TCU did. And I know it's kind of gone under the radar because it's TCU and they haven't been talked about and don't get talked about as much. But to lose Mike Miles and then have your starting backcourt now come in and be projected, Avery Anderson, who is a proven good player in the Big 12, and Jameer Nelson Jr., that's awesome. That's great. You get Mustafa from Coastal Carolina playing down low. He's one of the better big men in the mid-major ranks. Add in Travion Tennyson, who was a knockdown shooter at Corpus Christi, giving this TCU team some shooting that it desperately needs. Like, again, you talk about filling holes and not necessarily none of those guys are going to elevate TCU into being the favorites in the Big 12 or on the same plane as Kansas or anything like that. But I think whereas in the past you have a player like Mike Miles, at a school like TCU, and it's a quick drop off when he leaves, I think they maintain and continue to build as a program because of the quality of players they're bringing in for those roles.
Yeah. I'm going to say a school, and then you're going to need to let me explain.
Okay.
I think that you can only consider what Mark Mattson has done so far in the portal as a win for Cal.
Yes. Thank you for bringing them
up. You bring in a wired scorer like Jalen Cohn. You bring in Fardaz Amak, who went through his injury issues last year. But, I mean, last year he was viewed as one of those premier guys that you wanted on your program, went to Texas Tech, couldn't stay healthy, didn't work out. A lot of things didn't work out at Texas Tech. If they can get a couple more guys, you know, one or two, mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to, you know, all of a sudden make the tournament, but I think it sets them up really well moving forward and puts him in it. Like if they get Jalen Tyson, where I think he's more or less looking like he's going to end up at Cal.
Yeah.
You know, you get another former four star, like you get those guys who just come in into a program that couldn't get those guys before Mattson mm-hmm. got there. The past two coaches weren't able to get those players. They're not different. They're not huge difference makers individually, but it puts them in a position where it's not just, you know, oh, we're going to get Devin Askew this year. Like, yeah. Cal's still going to be bottom five in the Pac-12. So I'm not saying that they're some world beater, but
they're going to look like a power conference basketball team though.
Yes.
whereas they didn't. I was actually when Cohn committed, it's kind of looking at this, and they're not in this conversation by any stretch, but are they the best like duo that Cal's had since Jaylen Brown and Ivan Rabb were there? The second best duo I could think of was Justice Suing and Matt Bradley. And Amak and Cohn might be better than that duo was when they were at Cal. So like that's how long it's been since Cal's had two viable players.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had someone alongside Andre Kelly when he was there, right? I mean, this is certainly the best. The best, yes.
Forgettable for me.
Yeah. It's certainly the best that they've had since then. Likely, but I don't know. I'm going no, back because you had Matt Bradley playing with a bunch of, you know, yeah. Paris Austin was okay.
Like just assuming Matt Bradley is the only ones I could come up with where it was like maybe.
Just assuming and Matt Bradley had they played like they did at their next stops would have been incredible. Which is that's kind of an indictment on Wyking Jones. Or mm-hmm. anything else, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, they've had some really weird duos. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'd say.
It's been rough at Cal. Which I think the fact they hired and were able to get Mark Mattson, a Stanford guy, I did think made a statement that showed their commitment to the basketball program. A commitment that Stanford didn't seem willing to make. And so now Cal is getting some positive momentum, whereas Stanford lost their best player from last year's team, Harrison Ingram. He transferred. He's off to UNC. This UNC team is interesting, I think, on the surface.
Talk about former Stanford guys, because they also have Cormac.
Yeah, Cormac Ryan. Yeah. Yep. So they have Cormac Ryan. They brought him in from Notre Dame. Harrison Ingram in from Stanford. You obviously bring RJ Davis back. Bring Armando Bacot back, which is huge. And that's always having those two guys back is going to give you a solid baseline. But it also feels like this is a very, very important year three for Hubert Davis, considering that with hindsight, it's now basically been a good month and a half stretch. And that's all he has to show for his two seasons at the helm. Now he almost won a national title. But things were a mess last year. And Caleb Love leaving is addition by subtraction in some cases, but the pressure is on, I think, for him to get UNC back to being who we thought UNC is and could be under him. And I don't know how I feel about this group meeting that level.
No, I think whereas last year we thought the floor was going to be higher than it was. Like, if Cormac Ryan can harness what he had in, you know, the closing stretch of two seasons ago, mm-hmm. you have a reliable 3-point shooter. If Harrison Ingram can, you know, deliver a little bit more on what people thought he was coming out of high school, like, you have an excellent wing. But whereas last year we were assuming, oh, we have all these guys, we know what they can give you, and they just didn't give them that. This year mm-hmm. it's a lot of guys who, like, because even RJ Davis is coming off a year that was below expectations, right? So you got a lot of players, with the exception of Bacot, who need to deliver on what either people thought or what they've shown previously. And so UNC, I don't see them missing the tournament this year. I think they probably make it, but who knows, right? I mean, they've played yeah. 2 months of good basketball under Hubert Davis. Yeah. And maybe not even that, month and a half of good basketball under Hubert Davis. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, if they get the Cormac Ryan that scored 29 points against Alabama in the NCAA tournament 2 years ago, they'll be okay.
Yeah.
But that Cormac Ryan has shown up exactly one time in his college career. Mentioned Caleb Love. He's off to Michigan. I think this is also set up to be another important year for Juwan Howard at Michigan. I don't think he's on the hot seat by any stretch, but I do think that another season like last year, things get uncomfortable and a little uneasy. And adding Caleb Love to the mix isn't exactly like a comforting blanket, if you will. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's... I want to say this first. I do not think that Juwan Howard is a bad coach.
I think he's a great coach.
Honestly. I think he's an excellent coach.
A good to very good.
I think he's a good, he has a good grasp on knowing the fact that he needs to surround himself with other experienced coaches.
Mm.
I think one of his biggest issues is he focuses a lot on the shiny object. And maybe last year's issue, I don't want to say nepotism, but maybe.
Yeah.
I just think, again, it looks like he's going after shiny objects. You have Caleb Love coming in who, let's be honest, like, at this point, would you rather have Kirk Reese or Caleb Love on your roster? Probably Caleb Love, but I don't know how comfortable I am saying that definitively.
Yeah, and the fact that that's a conversation, I think, is extremely telling about the year Caleb Love had last season.
Yeah.
Which, if I told you Caleb Love posted career highs in field goal percentage and best assist turnover ratio in his career last season, would you believe me? Because he did.
3-point percentage isn't part of that, right? Just pure field
right,
goal
just percentage. Just field goal percentage.
I'd believe it. Because yeah, I think, like, he was consistently below average, but the previous year he was either good or terrible.
Yeah, but he had his most efficient season last season, and they got him run out of Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Yes.
You bring in Damari Burnett, who I don't
who knows what,
like,
he is.
Is he ever going to be the top 30 player that he was coming out of high school? Probably not.
No. So he's got injuries he's had to deal with, certainly, yeah. Knee injury. But he also left Texas Tech, and when he left Texas Tech, I think it was before the end of the season, when he left Texas Tech, there were, like, rumblings out of there that was like, yeah, he just didn't want to work hard.
Right, and I'm not going to take those into account. I'm not going to say that it's entirely on him why he hasn't delivered, but, like, injuries need to be taken into account, right? Absolutely. Maybe he's not going to be that guy. Trey Jackson, honestly, is my favorite signing from Howard.
Really?
Because he's efficient. He shoots it at like 38% from three, shoots it at over 50% from 2-point range. He fills a need that they have in that front court. Yeah, he was on a bad Seton Hall team, but like, or I don't want to call them, I won't call them bad. They were good on one end, bad on the other.
Yes.
But they were a poor offensive team, and he did okay offensively from a, mm-hmm. from an efficiency perspective. So like, you put him in a system that I think can benefit him offensively. He's not going to be a chucker. And that's what I fear from the other guys, is that they're just going to, yeah. they're going to go in there and they're going to be chuckers, and Juwan Howard's going to let that happen.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see there. Always interesting to see what happens at Arkansas. Because just like any other year, it seems like Eric Musselman has infinite scholarships to offer transfers. Arkansas has brought in, I think they've committed 5 guys so far. They got Tremont Mark from Houston, which is huge. L. Ellis from Louisville, Khalif Battle from Temple, Menifield from Washington, and Davenport from Cincinnati. 5 guards. So L. Ellis would be going to playing for a Louisville team that had all big men and no guards, to now playing for an Arkansas team that has all guards and no big men. I am interested to see how this works. Just on the surface, I'm like, yeah, I don't know what's happening here. But Eric Musselman's track record speaks for itself. Like, I'll probably pencil Arkansas into the second weekend, because that's become just a principle of college basketball these last couple of years. I think they'll work it out. I don't know how, because on paper it just looks like there's perhaps not enough of the basketball to go around for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, and I think one thing that to me sticks out is, yeah, in the past you've had that one guard who wasn't long, but like the last 3 Arkansas teams were relatively long teams.
Yeah,
right. L. Ellis is not long.
No.
Tremont Mark has okay length. Menifield's not all that long. Like Davenport, what, probably plays a small ball 4, or like they play 4 out and he's that 4 man.
Mm-hmm.
Khalif Battle's probably a 3 or a 4, just by virtue of the length they lack versus what they're getting. But like, again, this is very similar to West Virginia. Like, I think it's going to be a good team, and I think it works out. You're going to see the same. It's going to be the same story you have every year with Arkansas. But mm-hmm. I think I've reached the point where, like, I just don't know if this is what it's going to take to get into that final weekend.
Yeah, I'm with you. Last year felt like the team. This year does not. I still think they'll find a way to be effective. But this is certainly a team with questions. A team with questions. Let's leave it at that. Any other individuals or teams that really stick out to you as potentially having a major impact on the season?
I just don't know what any of those teams in the Pac-12 outside of Arizona State, Cal, and
yeah, what is Oregon doing? Are they just like duplicating the same player and going to put 5 of them on the court?
Yes.
My God, just a team of shot chucking low efficiency combo guards.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. The Pac-12 is not going to be good next year.
No.
I heard a lot of people saying, oh, USC should be the favorite to win the Pac-12 next year. And I was sitting there saying, no, that's crazy.
Bronny James shows up.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
reportedly on campus today on Wednesday, April 26th.
I don't know how crazy it is. Because if I'm going to go down the list, right, of transfer portal, and again, this is me overreacting negatively to the transfer portal, but Arizona has gotten in this cycle 0 players out of the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona State did well. They got Adam Miller. They got Sean Phillips. They got Zane Meeks. They lost a lot. The cupboard was starting to get bare, but they did well. Cal, we already talked about. Colorado, I like what they did. They're picking and choosing. They got Eddie Lampkin fits that mold of a Colorado big. They'll be probably top 5 in the Pac-12. We discussed Oregon. It's that law of efficiency. Oregon State.
Sorry, Andy.
They might be worse than they were last year. Stanford brings in Jared Bynum. To go along with their star freshman recruit, but I'm surprised they didn't move on from Jared Haas in the offseason.
If you're a good freshman, why are you going to Stanford? Like, I'm sick of these like just highly rated freshmen going to Stanford to toil away for eternity, and you end up like Harrison Ingram.
Yeah. Stefanovic is going to UCLA. That's their guy. That's who they brought in. USC. I feel like USC, if Bronny does go to USC, a lot of people are going to start committing there. Like, that's their golden goose. That is the gift that keeps on giving. Is we're going to bring Bronny in. There's going to be a lot of media attention on us, and a lot of players that are still in the portal are going to start prioritizing wanting to go to USC.
This is reckless speculation and nothing more than internet rumors, but there is allegedly a mystery team in the Hunter Dickinson case. And by case, I mean like his transfer race. Mm-hmm. It's also alleged that he's kind of like dragging the process out a little bit. No one really knows why, aside from that he wants to make a smart decision. USC has scholarship available. If Bronny commits, they still have one more. And there is some rumor out there that that mystery team is USC, and that Dickinson is interested in seeing what that might look like. With Bronny and that freshman class, what they have coming back, Boogie Ellis coming back.
I think that Andy Enfield team, like, system does for bigs, I think it's really beneficial.
Yeah.
Washington, I don't know what to make of their transfer portal ads, right? They bring in Moses Wood, who is okay.
Yeah.
I think he was a good WCC player, not great. Good, solid WCC player for a bad WCC team. Xavier Wheeler, who is undersized. And Anthony Holland, who, again, solid player on a team in the Mountain West that really didn't, you know, move the needle much. And then Washington State is like, man, I just feel so bad for Kyle Smith. I really do.
He should have taken the Washington State job. That's a tough job. That's one of the toughest jobs in the country, I think.
I mean, it's the toughest. It's the toughest team school in the Pac-12 to recruit to, because you're competing against all the other Pac-12 locations, which they're all better. Like, you know, you've got some Pac-12 teams out in the middle of nowhere, like Oregon State, but it's not Pullman. The weather's a bit nicer, and you're an hour and a half south of Spokane. And so, like, you're competing in the same air region as Gonzaga. I like Kyle Smith as an X's and O's coach. I just don't think you need someone to go to Washington State that just people want to play for from like salesman. He wouldn't do this, right? I don't think he's the type of guy that would do this based on everything I've heard about him. But like, if Klay Thompson were to retire from the NBA and go to Washington State and then just do the same thing that Juwan Howard did, which is just hire guys to coach the team. Like, you need someone with that type of pull, that someone that, oh, I want to go play for him because he was one of the, you know, greatest shooters in NBA history and he can help develop, you know, you'd get a ton of guards. Be like, oh, he could help develop me. Whether that's true or not.
Yeah, but you just go play with Klay Thompson or play for Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough there. You bring up Oregon. Like, I don't expect Khloe Ware to do much to change Indiana's fortunes next season. You know, I think he'll help mitigate the loss of TJD somewhat. But I don't think he's a difference maker. Shedrick going from Virginia to Texas, I think, is very interesting. Both from a decision standpoint and a role standpoint, because like Shedrick's a really good player. But I don't see like a ton of minutes or the thought that he's going to be like a real featured guy at Texas. You know, he'll be a featured part of that big man rotation, but he's probably getting 25 minutes a night, probably at most. Cause I think Dessou was still there. Right. And Dessou, I think you have to keep ahead of him in the pecking order. That was interesting to me. Those are two guys. And Jesse Edwards, to bring things full circle, talk about West Virginia. I think Jesse Edwards is talented. The criticism of him is that he is not the strongest with the ball or plays to his height all the time. He grew out of that at times last season at Syracuse, but if you are any kind of not tough around Bob Huggins, he's either going to get that out of you or going to be on the bench. So I'm interested to see how that turns out as well.
Well, not even not tough. It's the guards they brought in are not elite defenders necessarily. So like, you're going to be relying a lot on him to clean up messes. And I just don't see that happening.
Before we get out of here, I want to make sure that we touch on just some of the top teams in the country. I have Duke as the obvious number one right now for me. It sounded like you had them up there as well. I think behind them is a mix of Big East teams. Marquette's got a lot of preseason hype because they bring everybody back. UConn brings a good number of people back from the championship team. Creighton is up there as well. Who are those kind of teams that we're looking at that are going to be real threats and title contenders next season? As it stands,
that's it's still tough, right? I think it's those four. My top five is those four plus I think Michigan State. I forget who I had there. I think Michigan State, but then you have the uncertainty with regards to AJ Hogard.
Which was kind of out of the blue.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. I mean, I had heard rumors that he was looking to leave Michigan State, but it was with regards to the transfer portal, not necessarily the draft. But I mean, look, entering the draft process makes sense for basically every player in college basketball, you know, at some point in their career, just to get feedback. Do I think he's gone? Probably not, but we'll see. You got a lot of teams with low floors and high ceilings. A lot of teams with low floors and high ceilings.
Yeah.
Kansas would, I mean, like, at that point, you just start naming off teams that you know are going to be good.
Yeah. So I think Purdue gets in that mix if Zach Edey returns, which at this point looks to be a pretty big if. He's going to be a second round pick, but I don't know how else he can really help himself unless Purdue just comes through with a huge NIL deal. You know who's kind of sneaky in all this, I think, still?
Miami.
They lose Isaiah Wong, lose Jordan Miller, but Norchad Omier is back. Nigel Pack's back. Wuga Poplar is back, who really came on in the last season and is on NBA Scouts' radar for the next draft. He's in line for a breakout season. It seems like it's pretty wide open. I agree outside that top four right now. I think Miami could be one of those sneaky teams that we look up a couple weeks into the season and are like, I don't feel good about it, but Miami's a solid top 10 team.
So I was looking at my way too early. And granted, this is before the ED news and everything like that. My top seven was Purdue, which I would move them down because of that. But Purdue, UConn, Creighton, Marquette, Duke, Michigan State, and Miami were in my top seven in some order. Mm-hmm. I agree. I think they're starting to become one of those teams that maybe we thought Baylor was, the past few years, which is like, they'll just be there. Kansas was up there. But yeah, I mean, the more you look at it, right, I thought it was ridiculous to think, oh, Florida Atlantic is going to be top 10 again.
Yeah.
And you start looking at these teams and you're going, it's hard to not have them there.
I was going to say, where are you going to put FAU in all this? Because I've seen them rated anywhere. Like, they're pretty much top 20, but I've seen them rated anywhere from 20 to top 5. And the top 5 just feels a little weird just from the sound of it. But to me, outside of that Duke, Marquette, UConn, Creighton group, you could make as strong of a case for FAU as you could for really anybody else, given the fact they managed to hold on to pretty much everybody from that Final Four team last season. And there were some big names that came after their best players.
I think for me, after the seven I named, I'd probably have FAU in the same group as like I said, Kansas, Houston, Alabama, possibly Kentucky. Throw Gonzaga in there, and Arkansas right now. Just like teams that I'm not willing to throw up there as definitive contenders, but to me feel a lot safer than a team like Tennessee, for example, or a team like UCLA or something like that, where you just don't know what's going to happen. Like, we need to. Their Final Four run was not like UNC's. We need to get that clear. It was not fluky. They were good all year, and we sort of gave them the, for lack of a better term, the Gonzaga treatment of, oh, they didn't play a great schedule, so we don't think they're that good. They gave us no reason not to think that they were that good, but except for the fact that the teams they were playing were not as good as some of these other teams' resumes were. That said, I do think that putting them in the top, like, I feel like putting them in the top five is a little bit much. Because even at the end of last year, I don't know if I would have put them in the top 10 for sure. I don't know if I would have put FAU in the top five teams, even if I were to rank the top 25 at the end of the tournament last year.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's always important when you're evaluating a team like that who is coming off of a big run, because not all Final Four teams are created equal. And FAU certainly deserved that Final Four run. They were a very, very good team. But I do think they benefited from the region some. I looked at that bracket when it came out, and it was set up for whoever won that FAU-Memphis game, which was a crime. That was a first-round game. But as whoever won that FAU-Memphis game had a real chance to make a run. just because of the way that that bracket set up in the region, set up in some of the flaws of the higher seeds. If you put them in, like, I don't think they get past, they certainly don't get past UConn. I don't think they get past Gonzaga or even the hobbled UCLA team. They obviously didn't get past San Diego State, although they nearly did. I think them against Creighton would have been a toss up. I think they lose
to Texas.
Yeah, I think they lose to Texas. I think they lose to Miami. Or at least those games are Houston in there too. Those games are the very least toss ups, right? And they all went FAU's way. But we're not having this, is FAU a top five team conversation if they're put as the eight seed in Houston's region and are out in the first weekend?
This might be going a little bit too far. So we'll walk through their final four run. We've got probably 15 minutes left, so we have time. Their first game was against a Memphis team that they almost lost.
A good Memphis team, too. That Memphis team was good. They were finally healthy. And Memphis kind of actually shot themselves in the foot at the end of that game.
Right. Then they take on the 16 seed that beat Purdue. They had won two tournament games in a row. Flawed team. I'll just leave it at that.
Their 16 seed that did not win their conference tournament.
Right. They then play a Tennessee team, very tough team.
Mm-hmm.
The way you beat that Tennessee team is you give it right back to them and just keep shooting.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what FAU did. Tennessee went on their patented slumps, and FAU just didn't back down. Credit to them.
Mm-hmm.
If FAU had played Kansas State before the Michigan State game, meaning take the Michigan State defense, how they defended Marquise Noel out of it, do you think that the way that FAU defends Marquise Noel is any different? And I say that because Michigan State obviously, very obviously, played Marquise Noel to pass. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. They wanted him to pass, which is why they lost.
Yep.
FAU played him to shoot. They played him to shoot the entire game. And you know what? He made some of those shots, but he missed a whole hell of a lot more. And I think watching how Michigan State defended him put a lot of tape in front of Dusty May to say, look, we can't let him pass. Make him beat us by shooting the ball. And no one really defended that Kansas State the same way that Michigan State did. So I'm not saying that Kansas State would, you know, that FAU didn't deserve to win the game. They certainly did. But that's one of those ones where, like, 7 times out of 10, I probably pick Kansas State to win that game.
I think it'd be naive to say that seeing the Michigan State strategy did not help FAU. At the same time, I think Dusty May is a good enough coach and a smart enough guy, and we've seen him make really good adjustments on the fly to know that if they were playing Noel to pass and they were getting shredded, that there would be an adjustment made. That's not a knock on Tom Izzo. But I do think Tom Izzo, for better or worse, can be a little stubborn as a coach. and Michigan State almost won the game too, right? So it wasn't like, you know, it was an obvious flaw that was causing things. They wanted one guy to beat them and one guy beat them. I do like this FAU team. I like the pieces. I really like Dusty May as a coach. I really like Elijah Martin. Jonell Davis going left is almost automatic when he attacks the basket. I think they can be as good as they were last year.
Yeah.
And that is worthy of a top 15 ranking.
If sometimes they do top 10, exactly what they did last year, are they still a 9 seed?
No. Which is part of
That's, I mean, granted, they're in a new conference, right? So, like, if they do exactly
what they
did last
year. Yeah, they're in the American, which is essentially the bottom half of the old American and the top half of Conference USA. Yeah. All of those Conference USA flowers that the conference is being sent for how well they did in March and the NIT and the CBI and the NCAA tournament, all four of those teams are in the American now. Yeah. So, like, I think FAU will be good. I think they will be about as good as they were last year, if not maybe a little bit better. But I mm-hmm. think they can be that good to better and not come close to the Final Four.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing, right? It's really hard to make the Final Four.
Yeah.
Like, how many teams were better than FAU was last year that haven't made the Final Four? A lot. Yeah. A whole hell of a lot. So, like, it's, and this is, we can get into this another time about how Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan ruined sports discourse, but
rings.
Rings are all that matter. Like,
rings.
If you were to ask someone who takes that position, there are only seven teams in college basketball who have done anything of note in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Seven programs. Because rings are all that matter. Let alone the fact that FAU, you know, where they were versus where they are now.
Yeah.
Like,
it's insane. It's insane. Yeah. So, like, I'll say FAU is deserving to kind of bring this back to what we're talking about. FAU, I know I kind of got us down a different path, but I think the discourse on this FAU team is going to be fascinating all season long.
Yeah.
I think they're worthy of a top 15 ranking.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could buy an argument sliding them in around 10 or 9.
Yeah, I was going to say probably 9 to 12 is probably where I have them.
I have them 12th, so I'm in there with you. But the discourse around them being a top 5 team in the country, I think that boost is because they made the Final Four last year. And I don't think they were like the way you think of Final Four teams that return everybody.
Yeah.
You know, if they went through UConn's path, that's a different conversation. But they did get mm-hmm. some benefits of the doubt that got them to the Final Four. So to just kind of reward them ad hoc, basically, I think doesn't do the context enough justice.
If you look at their path, right? Like UConn's path was, in hindsight, pretty tough, relatively tough. Right?
Yeah. They avoided a one seed, but Arkansas,
good team. Good team. Gonzaga, good team. St. Mary's, good, solid team. Miami had the guard play. Like,
hell, Iona gave them more trouble than anybody else did in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last thing I want to get off my chest is the unfounded slander that should no longer be pointed toward Tommy Lloyd at Arizona.
The floor is yours.
I think Arizona fans feel entitled to something that, honestly, let's be frank, their program is not as good as they think it is historically. It's a great program historically, but it's not as good as they think it is historically. And what Tommy Lloyd has done in his first two seasons is maybe you could say just short of historic, right? I mean, most wins by a coach in his first 2 years as a head coach at that level. You know, he had a one seed, the second overall seed, and then he had a two seed this year. He makes the second weekend last year, loses one game to a team he should have beat, and all of a sudden the wheels fall off, right? And they're so used to, we're going to cast a wide net and take whoever we want. Approach that Sean Miller had the money to do, and did it work though?
He just had to throw the money part in there.
Like, did it work? They won Pac-12 titles, but they've won Pac-12 titles with Tommy Lloyd. And let's be honest, he did inherit guys from Sean Miller's time, but they weren't world beaters.
Like, they weren't as good as they were under Tommy Lloyd under Sean Miller, right. That's for sure.
And I think what we've learned from Gonzaga, right, if you take each of Gonzaga's additions in this transfer portal at just their individual face value, they're good, right? Nembhard's good. It's not his brother, but he's good. Graham EK is good. He's coming off an injury, but he's good. Steele Venters, great three-point shooter, has some flaws, but you can kind of see where they fit into what Gonzaga wants to do. And I think Gonzaga, Arizona now, they are programs where you get those different makers in there. Ben Mathurin, Chet Holmgren, Jalen Suggs. But the system makes a lot of those players, maybe not the difference makers, but makes a lot of the other players better. Mm-hmm. It just works. And you need to find people that go, that play into that system. And so Tommy Lloyd was all in on Ryan Nembhard. You felt like it was a lock, but you knew that with the fact that the same system is up in Spokane, you knew that Andrew had gone to Gonzaga. You knew that Mark Few likes to run that pick and roll and wanted that player. And he was guaranteed almost to start at the point at Gonzaga where Boswell might have been the starting point still in Arizona's system, that it was always a chance. But Tommy Lloyd wants to pinpoint guys who fit his system. So he's going, right? Misses out. And all of a sudden, people say he can't recruit, let alone the fact that, you know, 2 months ago, they were saying that Tommy Lloyd was what built Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. Now he can't recruit. And I just think it's fantastic that less than a week later, he lands a five-star guy for next year, which, you know, if he couldn't recruit, like, he can now.
He's committing to Arizona, Connor. He's not committing to Tommy Lloyd. He's committing to Arizona for the student-athlete experience. No other reason.
I saw some insane takes. I saw people say that Arizona couldn't compete with Gonzaga on an NIL level.
Folks, stay off the message boards. Yeah. Oh.
But I just appreciate that guys like Kevin Sweeney now are kind of calling out the fan base for like just a complete 180. Because
yeah,
any team outside of maybe six or seven would have been thrilled with what they got with what Arizona had the last 2 years. Thrilled.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's college sports is sports in general is what have you done for me lately business. And a lot of times in college sports, it's okay. What have you done this week? Unfortunately, it's some of these high pressure top end jobs. I think Tommy Lloyd will be fine. The discourse was unfounded, let's put it that way. It'll be just interesting to see, I think, how that relationship goes the next couple of years. But we'll see. That'll do it. First episode of the Heat Check Hangout, your number one source for all things basketball college. Thank you all for joining us, for listening to us on the audio side or on YouTube. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. We're working to get back on a regular schedule. We'll hopefully be back on that soon. And again, make sure you're paying attention to HeatCheckCBB.com and at HeatCheckCBB on social media to get updates on what we've been working on, because it's going to be a lot of fun and another fun-filled, action-packed off-season that hopefully provides a lot of good content for you out there as we get ready for next November.
And I just want to throw out there that for those of you who have not checked it out, we have Talia Goodman consistently updating our site with all the transfer portal news from the women's game. Obviously, the women's tournament was just as exciting, if not more exciting, than the men's tournament this year. Mm-hmm. With how it went. And, you know, I think we're one of the few outlets, you know, it might be Heat Check 24/7, maybe one or two others that are tracking all of this. So we've had a lot, but Talia's, I mean, she's had a lot of, she's had a lot of insight into who's entered before any of these other sites have. So go check that out, because we're, I think, looking possibly to expand our coverage of the women's game at Heat Check over the next, you know, couple of season, next season and going forward. And we would really appreciate, you know, people who want to consume that type of material to check it out.
Absolutely. I am staying away from it so that I don't let my Lady Gamecock bias overtake me. But it has infiltrated the site maybe a little bit. Kim Mulkey should be very, very afraid. No. That'll do it for this episode. Thank you guys again for watching and listening. We'll talk to you again next time.
Basketball, basketball college. Basketball, basketball college.
Oh, is that time already?
Whoa, basketball college. Basketball, basketball college. Basketball, basketball college. Whoa, basketball college.